Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Masculinity is a prison. Men police it, but also women police it.
In arguments, it's very important to be mindful of what the end goal is. I let that shit fly. Conehead, bird chest, rat balls.
Oh, you should fight with kid gloves. You should never unleash, you know, real shit on your partner because you're mad at them. Choose silence. I don't forget that I love my wife, even though we're fighting. When I was younger, the thought was right to be understood. And then when I got further along, it was right so that you can't be misunderstood, which is a higher bar. I think a lot of men, you don't really feel it. We try to power through it. You don't know why your blood pressure is boiling when your wife just said you're just like your mother. It's an entire part of your life and your body that you are ignoring, and it is affecting the world around you. When I was at MSNBC and there was a conservative on the show with us, and there was a moment on the show where the conservative said something that angered me and I lashed out at her, and the boss called me in afterwards and like, let's just look at this moment, and does this look good as a black man?
Hi there, lovers!
What's up?
Let's be honest, conflict is really, really conflicting. On one hand, you need it to grow, to challenge yourself, to get better. On the other hand, it makes you be at odds. And let's be honest, sometimes kind of hate the person that we love, maybe love the most out of anybody in this world. So this episode is with Tore, and Tore is somebody who is no stranger to conflict. And he talks about within his marriage, his decade-long marriage, how he has learned to find a way to make conflict work for versus against their relationship. And I think that that's a lofty goal that we should all work towards. On that note, this goal only works if three things are present. All the advice in the world, or any advice period, is only really gonna work for you if these three statements are true of your relationship. Are you ready? Statement one, you have to be with someone who likes learning how to change. Now, there are a lot of words here that are like hot button words, okay? They have to like learning. They have to actually enjoy learning new stuff, changing, adding some new skills, trying the cello, whatever it is. They have to like learning, but they also have to like learning how to change, because some people, they like learning how to be the same. They like learning things that validate their own opinions, their facts, that justify their behaviors. Or they like learning things that are unrelated to change and personal development. They're related to something completely different. So you have to be with somebody who likes learning how to personally change. Next, you have to be with somebody who's willing to learn from you. Now, I've actually seen this work in some relationships where somebody is with somebody who refuses to learn from them. But if the neighbor says it, they'll listen. But I'm just gonna say, all in all, I highly recommend that you try to find somebody who likes to learn from you. And of course, vice versa has to work. And lastly, guys, you gotta be with somebody who wants to argue with you like you're their lover and not their ex. I'm going to talk about how challenging this is and specifically why this piece of advice that came from Torre was really illuminating for me and I actually think can be a mantra for all of you. So we're going to dive into this conversation with Torre and the great nuggets that he shared. And then we're going to come back to class and I'm going to bring in my personal teacher as well, my husband, Jared Brady. This is the person that I have conflict with quite a bit. And so I also wanted to make sure. But first, to Torre. There was something that you had said with me that you didn't mean it in this way, but we were talking about the topic of arguments and how in arguments it's very important to be mindful of what the end goal is.
I do think that you should hopefully not fight like a lawyer who's trying to win a point, but fight or conversate like a scientist who's trying to figure out what's really going on here. Because we know we're not really talking about the thing we're talking about, but we are talking about the thing we're talking about. But when couples get into arguments, it's really important how you fight and that you don't forget that you love the other person, even though you have this disagreement. One of the things that I saw in my parents was an ability to let the other person download their frustration or anger, and the other would just kind of listen. And then that was kind of it. The other one might say, okay, I'm sorry, or whatever. But I don't remember them going back and forth ever and like chirping and having like a conversation that was unhappy. One person would be unhappy and the other person would just listen. Sometimes my wife might be yelling at me and I might, and this doesn't happen very often, but you know, and she's like, after a while, she's like, you're not saying anything. I'm like, well, I'm just listening. I'm letting you get out your thoughts and feelings. And when I or you feel like, okay, you've completed the dump, then I can maybe say, okay, you're right here, you're right there. I disagree there. But like, I want you to feel like you got everything out.
It's interesting because that's the line. When you said, do you want to fight like an ex or are you going to fight like a lawyer? Or a scientist. And I immediately heard X as EX, which that could have been because we were fresh off of our conversation about X's. So my brain was like, oh yeah. But then I actually thought about that some more and I realized a lot of people, myself included, my parents included, fought with each other as if they were already X's. Which I think to some degree is natural, right? When your body goes into fight or flight, because when you feel like you're being socially judged, I mean, that can feel life-threatening, right? You can feel like I am about to be characterized negatively. I'm about to be ousted from the group for being a terrible person. So it's normal almost to go into fight or flight. Like, I must prove my worth. I must prove that I'm good. I must prove that I'm not the problem one. So it almost is... you might start to think of it like it's you or me at this point. And I loved that story that you even just shared about seeing your parents not fight with each other as if they were exes, because that in itself feels revolutionary.
I think we could call it a double standard if we want, or we could just get down to like what we need to do. And I think as men, we need to understand that quite often when we say to women, they go, so I'm not B? And I'm like, I didn't say that. But I say that to say, we need to be really careful what we say to them in those emotionally vulnerable spaces when we're kind of arguing and be like really thoughtful with our words. And it sounds almost crazy making, but like as a writer, when I was younger, the thought was write to be understood. And then when I got further along, it was write so that you can't be misunderstood, which is a higher bar and a more of a thinking about what is the audience, how is the audience receiving what I'm saying or writing. We have to be really thoughtful about what we are saying to our women. And I don't want that to come off in any patronizing way, but like, do you not think that there is something to what I'm saying, that women are taking what we're saying in certain ways that maybe we don't mean, but they're getting upset and hurt, and we need to be thoughtful about what we're saying so that that doesn't happen?
I think that your experiences in loving women, so that might color the way that you're seeing this. My experience is in loving men, so I find men to be extremely sensitive, and I find them to be overly sensitive to the idea that they're not good. So any small reflection or critique, I think, tends to feel like a bigger critique of their character. And maybe I feel like women are better at accepting something small at face value versus assuming that it must mean something grander that we're trying to make a commentary on. But I think that we both may just have, you know, biased reflections based on our lived experience here. I actually wonder if you would substitute that amazing quote that you just gave. Would you substitute right with fight?
I think that a fight means that somebody is really upset about something and feels like they haven't been heard. And if we can try to be a little bit better at, oh, she's saying I'm not listening, so let me plug in a little bit better. Again, thinking about what she's saying isn't really the point. Can I drill down deeper to understand what she's really talking about? And, you know, maybe even asking questions to figure out what is she really talking about without being dismissive as like, you know, well, I know this isn't the real issue, so what's the real issue?
Yeah, I was about to say, because that, even if we know it's not the real thing, I'm not ready for the ego check yet to admit that other thing really impacted me. So I want to make it about the fact that you keep putting the sponge in the sink versus in that little suction thing that I put to the side. I want to make it about that because I don't want to make it about the ways in which I felt jealousy at last night's dinner party or the ways in which I felt hurt by the fact that you made that comment to your mom about me. That I'm not ready to talk about, but I feel much more comfortable being like, I told you to swipe. This is precisely why. So I wonder, like, as a partner who kind of knows about something deeper, how do we get to that without maybe pushing our partner to that ego check that it often takes when we say, hey, we both know this is not what it's really about?
I think each situation is going to be different. I think that we need to try to not be defensive or not be overly defensive when our partner comes to us with criticism or complaint. Because defensiveness and shutting down is a very natural response. Is it possible to listen with some humility so that I can let you dump, this is the primary thought, and get through that to where she can get to, okay, here's what I'm really upset about? Because, you know, sometimes you will have, like, she'll or he'll start the problem, and then you have the fight. You're not really hearing each other. You're kind of reactionary and pushing each other's buttons. And then it calms down, like you're tired of fighting. And then you can talk more peacefully about, like, this is what's really going on. Like, it really hurt me when you blah, blah, blah. Like, okay, I understand. That makes sense. I won't do that again. Whatever. But, like, you had to get through the storm to get to the after place. And, you know, I think it's just about trying to perceive in your partner, what does she need right now? One big thing for me when they talk about, do you need me to try to solve the problem or just listen to the problem? And sometimes she just wants you to listen to the problem. And she's complaining about you. She does not want you to solve it. She just wants you to listen to her download, I'm upset about dot, dot, dot. And you have to let her do that. And if she feels successful in doing that, perhaps she'll be more able to move on because she has expressed her feeling.
I actually think that that's a great answer even to that small problem that presents itself as the problem, but we know it's just the thing on top of the problem. Acknowledging that and seeking to repair on that, which immediately will take you from level here to here, because they said, you know what? You have brought up the sponge a few times. I did tell you that I would work on it. I completely forgot. I dismissed, you know, your feelings. I haven't shown you that I was listening, so I'm sorry. So I'm like, okay, now I'm down a level. And then it can be, hey, does this by chance have anything to do with what happened last week? Like, there might be a chance now for me to get there. I think what people often do is say, no, it's not about the sponge. And then the other person now has to dig in and make that more of an issue to try to justify their feelings.
Sometimes a person may say, I feel X. And the other person will say, well, I feel Y. But what if you just focused on the other person? Instead of saying what you feel, she said, I feel X. And you said, so you're saying you feel X. So it stays on her. Or why do you feel that way? Or, you know, what's going on? So it's the conversation stays on her. And now she's feeling heard, rather than you taking it into yourself and saying, well, I feel like Y, which in her mind or in his mind may be like, did you hear me? Because you just took it immediately to you and what you need.
There's this analogy that I gave, and it's something that we utilize in my marriage. But what I think often happens when there is a misunderstanding or a conflict. Imagine, Natalie, you're home and you're inside, you're watching your favorite TV show, right? And Easy comes in and she is soaking wet. And she's like, where were you? Like, where have you been? You're supposed to pick me up. I was outside in the rain. Now I'm soaking wet. You're mad because she came in really aggressive. But also, she's the one who's wet right now. Mm-hmm. She's the one who's disappointed. So your first priority has to be like, let's get you in dry clothes. Let me apologize to you because you're the person who's like really been impacted right now. And then after you're dry and you're settled and you're calm, now I can come to you and say, hey, I know that I let you down, disappointed you, and there was a miscommunication, but the way you brought it to me was hurtful. Mm-hmm. And I think that in mind, sometimes whenever whoever comes with the problem first, see that person as the person who's been outside cold, wet, and irritated. And even though the way that they brought it to you may not be the most comfortable way, just get that person dry and warm first, and then you can bring your thing in.
Mm. Wow. That was the best example I've heard in a really long time. And it was a great example of how she deals with things. And I'm like, not trying to be funny, like that really touched the spot. And I was like, dang, that's what I feel like, coming in wet all the time. And it's just like, well, why are you mad? Wait, why are you yelling? You know, it's like, well, damn, I'm out here soaking wet. Like, that's so crazy you said that. I almost got emotional. That's how I feel.
So whenever we get into an argument, it's the person who comes to you with the issue is probably the person who has been feeling wet and abandoned. So we try to use the language of like, hey, I'm the one who was left out in the rain. As much as you might be feeling however you're feeling, and you're entitled to your, you know, feelings of feeling misunderstood or feeling attacked right now, I'm the one who's wet right now, who requires the attention. So I guess I'm curious to know, for you, if that lands in the analogy you're talking about. So rather than making it gendered, like women need, is it a matter of whomever really addresses or brings up the issue first? You know, that's the person who gets the attention and care first. And then once we're dry and by the fire, now we can both start to bring in our different sides.
Perhaps. I mean, you know, I think it's important to note in the situation that you guys are misaligned. The thing I think about in that moment is I try to assume good intent in my partner. I would never assume that my wife did something maliciously or forgot. I would always assume, hey, her schedule got fucked. Maybe, you know, even if she forgot, it was under the best of circumstances. I mean, you know, I could never really get too mad at my wife, because then I'm like, you know, she spent 18 months carrying children in her body and all the other things. So I'm like, whatever. You do find a lot of times that women in particular have significant, righteously emotional needs in a relationship. Everyone does. I think men have, in general, less emotional intelligence than women and tend to be asked to deal with her emotional life, which is, you should. And I think there's definitely times when women are unable or unwilling to deal with men's emotional life in the same way that they are asking from men. Because men are not supposed to be as emotional as women. And you get too emotional and you're kind of a bitch. And that's not really what I want. It's not a real man. And so men's emotional needs may get pushed to the side. Because even dealing with your emotions is difficult.
Yeah, I 1,000% agree. I think of an example of this where I have a friend of mine whom she is very progressive, very feminist, very humanist. And she called into her life, you know, through therapy and through work and through making better choices and not falling into old patterns, a romantic partner that was deeply in tune, not just with her emotional needs, but also their own emotional needs. And as a result, he was bringing up a lot of conflicts or things that he needed adjusted, starting with, I feel like, and her reaction, despite, you know, all of the things that she said that she wanted, was like, well, f*** your feelings. Like, that's, why is that relevant? Like, man up. Like, who cares about how you feel? But that was a period of time, right, in which they had to make an adjustment to the cultural norms that they had fallen into. And also, she had to come face to face with the fact that thinking you want something and actually having something are very different, and they require different skills. There's a certain set of skills that it requires to even call into your life a man who is emotionally in tune. And I love emotional intelligence as like even a phrasing, because intelligence is just the result of effort, education, mentorship, scaffolding, and repetition. And so similarly, like, emotional intelligence is just that, how men even commune together, right? It's often watching something, or you're playing something, or even if you are playing cards, you have something else to look at. Like, rather than with women, there's a shoulder to shoulder, pelvis to pelvis, eyes to eyes communication that's happening. But do you feel like it is like inherent that men just have to sort of suck it up because culture expects that of them? Or is there not just a shift that has to happen where both people have to realize, like, oh, there's a new level of understanding of what a man is or what a man does or how a man should behave that we have to both get to and want to get to together. This episode is brought to you by Aria, a service that's for anybody who's kind of felt a little frustrated by the notion of you got to keep things interesting and spicy in your relationship, but after a while, you just kind of run out of ideas for spices and you wish that there was something or someone that could just take out the guesswork of what to try next together. Enter Aria, a platform that makes breaking the routine the new routine in your relationships and helps you make things new again. So Aria is an amazing service that gives you guided monthly experiences, expert created scenes, a concierge you can text anytime, and I mean anytime. And it also gives you everything you need delivered discreetly to your door. They also have a really cool offer happening for the holidays right now, so listen up. New members who purchase an Aria gift card for somebody special in their life, you're also gonna get a free Aria intimacy deck delivered to you discreetly in an envelope. Quiet on the outside and lots of fun exploration and intimacy on the inside. To learn more about this and to find out what your erotic persona is, go to aria.fyi. That's ARYA.FYI. All right, back to the episode. Do you feel like it is like inherent that men just have to sort of suck it up because culture expects that of them? Or is there not just a shift that has to happen where both people have to realize, like, oh, there's a new level of understanding of what a man is or what a man does or how a man should behave that we have to both get to and want to get to together?
Masculinity is a prison, right? Men police it, but also women police it, right? And the women in your life will remind you that's not masculine and will, like... Now, you know, I think there's a wildly varying amount of emotional intelligence among men. And I'm not necessarily putting myself, above 50% or at all. Like, I may be just average. I would imagine if we really were honest, the higher level of the scale of emotional intelligence for men would rate fairly low on emotional intelligence among women. You're not really prized among men, other men, for being emotionally intelligent. And I think women prize that in each other. We prize other things, being smart, being witty, being rich, being tough, being strong, being funny, being clever. Like, we love all those things. But I don't think we look to each other. I think generally when we have a deep emotional need, we look to talk to our women.
There's something that's called amygdala hijack, where in essence, the amygdala, which is the responsive hothead part of your brain, essentially hijacks your brain, where all energy goes there and it shuts off access to the prefrontal cortex, which is that beautiful part that develops after 25 when you start being like, oh, the world is about more than just me. There's perspective, there's philosophy, there's scenarios, and that things aren't black and white. Like, there's a million different shades in between there. So that part of your brain can often get shut off when you are in fight or flight, when you have a perceived threat. And again, social ousting or being socially wrong or outcasted, that can literally feel like a physical threat to your body. So for a lot of people, and I would say men especially, like, if you don't have practice managing your emotions and naming different kinds of emotions, emotionally regulating yourself, then you can go through amygdala hijack quite a bit. And I think we can both agree statistically that, you know, men get angrier and there's bigger consequences that come with their anger. Men are often the ones, I'll let you reflect on that.
Well, I mean, yes, for all I talking about women and emotions, male anger is the big issue that most of us have to deal with, men and women, and it can have, you know, disastrous consequences for women, emotionally, physically, you know, in all sorts of ways. So, I mean, yeah, it's quite dangerous. I mean, I feel like I was socialized out of being able to get really angry fairly early, as far as, like, you know, for a black male, as for me, quite often in white spaces as a kid growing up in private school. So it was like, you can't be getting super angry. We'll get expelled. We will get arrested. Like, you know, we have to be cool. Like, even if somebody is bothering, like, we got to be, handle it in a cool. So, I mean, I'm sort of blocked even from getting too angry. I mean, like, somebody would have to, like, I did get really angry. Somebody threatened my wife online, and I got very angry, and I responded in a way that everybody could see that he's very angry. But that's different, you know, that it's not a threat to me. A threat to me would be handled in a cool way. A threat to my wife would be handled in an angry way, right? But that's an external thing.
I was going to say that for you, because one of the things that we love about you, which you are so beloved and have been starting important conversations, sharing important bits of information, but also engaging in difficult conversations, often with opposing opinions. But you always keep your cool. And so I'm curious if, again, going back to you saying I have medium emotional intelligence, I feel like you couldn't do your job as well as you do without a very high level of emotional intelligence.
I mean, yes, no. You know, you remind me of early on when I was at MSNBC and there was a conservative on the show with us, and, like, conservatives really, really bother me. And, like, now compared to, like, 8-9 years ago, it's, like, insane. Like, they were super tame and they were still, like, bothered the shit out of me. And there was a moment on the show where the conservative said something that angered me and I sort of lashed out at her, and not unprofessionally, but the boss called me in afterwards and, like, let's just look at this moment. And does this look good as a black man? And he was a white man, but he was like, just let's be real. As a black man, sort of like giving it to this white woman. And no, it does not look good. And one of the things that I learned in watching myself after that is that your eyebrows have a big control over how you look, how open or closed your face looks. And if your eyebrows are up, then your face looks open and inviting. And even if I am saying something mean and rude to you, it will look happy. And, you know, like if I say something mean and rude to you with my eyebrows up here, you would be confused because you're like, the face is so open, but the words are so cutting. I am confused here. And if your eyebrows are at normal level or lower, you look mean. So I learned I have to control the way the face looks to present, you know, calmly, openly, you know, invitingly. Now, was that actually dealing with my emotions? No, it was really like subverting it in a television context so that you understand this is what I want you to see rather than what I'm actually feeling. I went to a, let's call it a men's emotion camp thing once, because I was really depressed and somebody offered me a slot at this sort of, you know, one of these like retreats where guys go and experience their emotions. And it was the first time that I was really able to acknowledge and think about emotions and how I feel. And, you know, but you're still sort of blocked of like, you know, they were like, so now we're going to do, we did the silly game to experience joy and name that. But then we were like, went in the woods and we're like, okay, now we're going to yell at trees and we want you to experience anger and like get it out. And like, imagine the tree is somebody you're very angry at or somebody you want to say something very real to. And guys are like going off in all corners of the little forest and like finding trees to yell at their dad or whatever. And I'm like, I am not, I can tell you right now, I am not going to be able to access anger in a performative, you know, way like this, or, you know, therapeutic, sterile way like that. Like, I just can't do that.
You sound a lot like me. I actually went away to like a group therapy retreat that my friend invited me to, and I wasn't able to connect with it. And a part of me kind of felt like, one, I feel like I practiced the work in my own lived life, and so doing it with strangers or a tree didn't feel useful to me. And when I had called that out to the therapist, they were like, okay, well, maybe it's that you don't need this work, or maybe it's that you need it more than anybody else here. And I was like, got it. See that POV? Still think I don't need it. But I am curious, like, because a lot of men have the opportunity to do something like that. So, you know, what component of that, kind of to your point, if men don't really have outlets to genuinely express their emotions really ever, going to a place that is specifically designed to do such, what good can come of that?
It's an entire part of your life and your body that you are ignoring, and it is affecting the world around you. It's like the weather. It would be like being unaware of the weather and meteorological reality, but being surprised that you're wet when you go outside. Well, you know, you could have looked up that it's raining because there are clouds that need to release moisture and just taken an umbrella and a jacket and you wouldn't be so wet. But you don't know why your blood pressure is boiling when your wife just said you're just like your mother. You don't know why that is. Well, she's triggering you because you have this resentment because, you know, you just need to be able to be aware, at least being aware of your emotions is valuable. For a large part of my life, this sort of conversation would have been dismissed as some white sh-. You know, I'd be on some white boy sh-. And like, no, this is real. Black men have emotions just the same as white men. Does it make you corny and white to be aware of your emotions? Like, what are you talking about?
100%. What a beautiful sermon. I love that notion too of there are some things you can't get around only through, but there is, kind of going back to the beginning of our conversation, a mindfulness that you have to have when you're going through it, that this is not all there is. It's a cognitive rule that sometimes people can go under the premise of what you see is all there is. And that means like, I just respond to like, what is the now? Cause I'm accepting this as the new normal. But when you've lived enough life or done enough years of marriage or been on enough TV shows, you realize that how you're feeling in the moment is not all that there is. Cause sometimes people say to you, you know, when you say something in an argument And then someone's like, well, that's how you really feel. And the real truth is, it's actually not how you feel. It's the meanest way that you can describe your feelings, or the one-dimensional way that you can describe your feelings. But to your point of acknowledging that, like, yes, like, you have to feel your way through it, but you also have to have that thing in the back of your mind that says, I still have to deal with this person and be with them on the other side, so I should watch what I say. How do you build in that filter?
I don't forget that I love my wife, even though we're fighting. Even though she pissed me off, I pissed her off, and she's in my face, but I don't forget that I love her. I don't forget that I continue to want to be with her. You know, I look at being a husband in part about service, right? And like being there for her when she needs encouragement, when she needs to be provided for, when she needs, you know, me to run to the store, get her something, whatever it is, to give her some of my food, to buy her something, like whatever it is she needs, and, you know, supposed to try to say yes and like help her get what she needs and help her do what she wants to do. Listening to her when she's upset is part of that, and making her feel heard. You know, that has to be part of what being a good husband is, I think.
I agree 1,000%. I grew up in a household where the meanest thing wins. And it was interesting because not only did I see that, I also saw my parents stay together. Kind of to your point, it wasn't like we say the meanest things, we shake hands like we just lost a soccer game and, you know, go about our lives. We say the meanest things and then we don't talk for a month, or we're in silent treatment for days. And the argument lasts a lot longer, but the satisfaction that you would get, because I've experienced this, I was on your podcast talking about my last relationship, and you asked a very profound question because I described, you know, a very stereotypically heinous relationship of cheating and contracting an STI and mistrust and lies. And then you said, okay, well, if this person was here, what would they say that you contributed? You know, where were some of the ways in which you were also responsible for the way that this relationship ended off? And I had mentioned to you a few things, but the one thing that I didn't mention, which I definitely should, is I let that shit fly. You know what I mean? Conehead, bird chest, rat nipples, small dick, like you name it. Like, oh. I wasn't allowed to express anger in a big way because they expressed anger in a very big way. So I had to express things in almost a cruel, calm, calculated way. But my defense was to say the meanest thing that came to mind. And, you know, some things can be forgiven, but many things can never truly heal. And that was something what I learned when I got into my relationship with my husband, because he is non-reactive, you know, similar to you, and doesn't express anger. When I started to kind of get into the habit of going into fight or flight and maybe saying something mean or disrespectful or trying to win the argument in that way, he would almost have no reaction. And in the past, I was with a partner who was very responsive. So if I said something mean, they would say something very mean. And then it would escalate in that way, which never really allowed me to acknowledge that, like, hey, you said something super cruel. Because I was like, well, wait, I may have said something cruel, but then they spat on me afterwards, or then they did this. And so it would almost cancel out whatever I did. But being with a partner who didn't respond, it was just like having to look at, I used to describe it as white snow. You know, when you step in white snow, or you pee in white snow, or it's, and then afterwards you just look and you see a reflection of all the worst parts of you, you know, of the turmoil that you put your partner through. And because they didn't kick that snow back into your face, you know, there was nothing else to do but to acknowledge that. So I had to kind of learn the hard way. And then I had to learn to curb this behavior. And even now in my marriage recently, the last thing I've held on to is like eye rolls. Like when I'm really pissed and you say something, I'm like, oh my God. And even that, he's like, hey, stop doing that. And I'm like, well, what do I have? You know, what do I have left? How can I express when I am in fight or flight, when I really am upset, if I can't yell and I can't name call and I can't eye roll, what can I do? And maybe the answer that you gave is just to love. And also take a break until I can return to loving.
Well, that take a break until you can return to loving is totally valid. Silence is a fantastic response, better than saying something that you will later wish you had not said, or that will hurt her the way you feel now, the anger, the tight chest, the tension in the neck and shoulders, you're so angry, that will fade. And speaking from that place is going to be a problem. Look, you know to not respond to your boss with an angry email. Your boss said something about the project or asked you to do some don't like it, you're upset, but you're going to do it because you like to continue to be employed. You know to take a breath, don't say, fuck you, sincerely, Jack.
Bird chest, conehead.
Why isn't that in your relationship when your wife or girlfriend or whatever, boyfriend, husband, says some shit that pisses you off? I still love you. I'm not gonna verbally punch you. I'm gonna hold it together, not say the thing, not say the verbal bullet that is in the chamber.
That you teed me up for. You tossed me the alley-oop. It's right there.
Even if this relationship is something you value, fight like you are near the exit door of the relationship and you don't wanna go out. I just wanna ask you to not do that. I don't want to break up, but I'm just asking you to not do that thing. Can you just chill on that? You should fight with kid gloves. You should never unleash, real shit on your partner because you're mad at them. Choose silence and get us back both down to here so we can talk our way through this issue.
I love how your eyebrows are up during this. I want to say in closing.
That happens naturally now.
Which I feel like if I had my eyebrows up, it would look like really... What are you about to mother... I'm not believing a thing you're saying, but I have to watch what my mouth is doing too. So it's eyebrows up, not head tilted, keep fucking going.
Right.
Yeah, it is challenging. And I want to kind of end on that note is that there's going to be people listening to this and saying, see, Torre's giving you the blueprint. Why can't you just do this? See, this is what we should be doing. For anybody who's feeling the impatience of having an intention for how they want to, because nobody wants to fight like it's their ex. Nobody wants to fight dirty or mean, but we do. So what can you speak to in terms of the gap between knowing this and practicing this?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, you did make me think that we will probably fight in a way that is reminiscent of what we saw and experienced in our childhood home. Right, because we see our parents fight and then our parents fight with us. So we carry that style of fighting into our relationships. And you may have a different style of fighting than I. You come from a different way of fighting than I did. I think being aware, just doing a mental catalog of what was the sort of fighting that happened in my childhood home between my parents, between me and my parents? Siblings is a different thing, I think. And what is the style of conversational fighting that I am used to and that she or he or they are used to? And, if you can, if you know their family, what is the style of fighting that they come... Just so you're aware of how we tend to do things, because you're going to replicate those patterns even if you're aware of them. But if you're aware of such things, that's a little bit better. But just try to fight in a way that remembers that you love that person.
I think it's beautiful and profound advice. I also think it's important, too, to your point, hear other stories, other examples, hear conversations like this in times that you're calm to give yourself a fighting chance of being able to apply it when it counts. That's the NBA. You don't practice that trick shot at the last minute at the fourth quarter of the NBA championships. You've been practicing it a lot in hopes that when the moment comes, you're able to rise to it. But sometimes you just can't. And there's also forgiveness that comes with that and learnings that come with that too. So for anybody who, wants the benefit of kind of the wisdom that you have, I'd love for you to talk about your podcast. I think that could be a really great tool for people. One, also two, any books that you've read or, you know, things that people can do to deepen their learning and understanding so that they can get to the level that you're at, even though you don't give yourself enough credit. Even though you don't give yourself enough credit, I think that it's a far cry. Aim much higher
than this. I'm on YouTube at ToreTube. I'm on TikTok at, I forget what I made it, YT at ToreTube, trying to promote people to go to the YouTube. We're going to do this show, Why Did They Break Up? I'm super excited about that. I imagine that after a little while, we'll be like showing up in your town, like, you know, three or four people are going to come up on stage with me and talk about their relationship and like why it fell apart. I mean, like, would you not love to come to an event where I'm like, I'm going to talk to you about your breakup, and like you're going to hear a bunch of people tell a crazy relationship breakup story? Like, that would be like a fun evening of stories, right?
100%. I'll come wherever you're going. How about that? So I'm there.
I'll hold you to that, Shan.
This was amazing. Thank you for all the advice and nuggets. And I really enjoyed talking to you. I learned a lot.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you.
Are you not noting my eyebrows? Because this is me implementing in real time the lesson I got. Thank you so much to Tore for coming through. His White Passing Hall of Fame series is iconic. He has so many interesting thought pieces. He has been culturally relevant for decades now and continues to drive conversations, perspectives, and opinions. Check him out. Go to his Instagram page. Check out his website. Dive into his work. And while we're diving, let's dive into the waters of conflict together. So let's get this class going. But first, I want to hear from you guys. What came up in the Tore episode?
I really love this topic because I was in my first adult relationship recently and I realized like communication. I always thought that I had like a good communication style, but I realized that it's not that I had a bad one. I just didn't have the skills. So I'm excited, you know, moving forward for my next relationship, practicing those skills now with myself, with the people around me. I'm learning the importance of all relationships, you know.
I don't like conflict. I try to avoid it, and that's just not an realistic expectation when you're a human. And this, I've associated fighting with such a negative experience, and it doesn't have to be that way. So when he said to fight like lovers, that really struck me, and allowed my brain to kind of approach fighting in a more loving space and not so heavy and like avoidant. So that's kind of my initial thoughts around everything.
Asking someone to change a behavior that is tied with their survival, that they usually have to make that decision to make that change while they're in fight or flight, is a hefty ask. So when we can frame conflict in that way of understanding how hard it is to get the best of somebody when you've put them in one of the worst historical circumstances, I think that gives a deeper appreciation for, one, how people come to their conflict strategies, and then two, for how hard it is to get them to form a new one with you. On that note, Jared, can I share something about the aha that I made for you?
Yeah.
One of Jared and I's like major sort of contention points is when I have a problem with him, he immediately starts to defend his whole character. And that can get really frustrating because I'm just trying to say something very specific and it goes into this big, I'm a good person, I've done great things, I'm this, I'm that, and I didn't do that. And like owning the conflict is very difficult, or owning the bad thing that he did is very hard. But recently I've kind of just started to think about it, and Jared, like many of us, like myself included, but very differently Jared, grew up in a time where it was spare the rod, spoil the child, which means it's cool to hit your kids. So being wrong was directly tied with being harmed. And so in my world now, and he's operated that way for 20 years. I meet him at 25 years old, and now I'm trying to tell him he did something wrong, and I'm really confused as to why he never wants to embrace the fact that he could possibly have done something wrong. And it took me until this year to be like, maybe that's why. Honestly, maybe that's not why. That doesn't have to necessarily be the reason for it, but it just helped me to understand again that counter conditioning that I'm working against, and also being able to see my partner in a light that allows me to not just think that they're fucking crazy and hard-headed.
Dealing with conflict in a relationship is a dance. And I think a lot of times people, you know, if the other person is not willing to also try to figure out how to disarm you, and you're the only one carrying that, you're the only one, you know, showing up to classes and talking about it and having these difficult conversations, and your partner is not involved, it is so difficult to get that person to, you know, change the way that you guys argue. Like, there has to be a line where people are just like, okay, this can't work on just me. Like, this has to be us together. And if it's not that, then I honestly think that it's just it's a lost cause.
I hope I got better at this, but I used to argue stone cold. Like, no emotion.
You've gotten definitely way better at that, for sure.
And so divorce or the thought of breaking up, even with friends or anybody, if I'm in conflict with you, my immediate brain goes to, I could do life without you. And so I'm trying to prove almost in the argument how insignificant somebody is to me, because I'm trying to soften the blow of possibly losing them. And I've had to, again, strategize my worst self by, like, silencing that part of my brain. Again, also repeating the kind of framework I want to have in conflict in my calm state as well. So I say all the time, I'll be with Jared the rest of my life. I say that in videos. I say that here just to remind myself of that truth. There's nothing that's going to happen between us that is going to cause me to leave this person. I do not have to argue with him like he will be an ex. He will never be my ex. I will be with Jared for the rest of my life. I say that now, and when I'm in conflict and then I'm able to get my body to react and respond as if it's talking to my lover, because my instinct is really the exact opposite. My conditioning from years and years is really the exact opposite.
I like staying, like you're not leaving this person. And you said it a few times, which I have, but like I got misty too. I was like thinking about my own. That really moved me. And I was like, what does it mean to like really fully be in that place of like, I don't have this option to go, and I'm gonna keep that with me. So just wanted to name that.
Even when you said, I don't have an option to go, my body was like, like, but that is what I'm saying. Like, it's not even an option that I would leave you. Yeah, it's really hard to come back to those words. Really, really hard. So hard for me too. So I second that with you.
Okay, are we gonna all share the negative side first, and then the positive? What did work?
Yeah,
two things that definitely don't work. I think as a male, you know, growing up, obviously a lot of the easiest emotions to display is anger, and what will never work is when I get stern, or if I try to get aggressive, you know. And when I think to my childhood, a lot of that came from growing up with friends. I have three brothers, and a lot of our problems were solved with just anger, yelling, and that will never work in a relationship. And because I lean toward that, because it's the easiest emotion that we're taught when we're young. And I think the other thing that definitely doesn't work is when I try to take the argument or the disagreement into the courtroom. I go, okay, well, give me an example when you're telling me I did this. Give me an exact example. And like that would always lead from a 10-minute argument to now it's an hour, because now we're not even just arguing or trying to fix the issue. The courtroom was a big hurdle that I have been, I mean, babe, you could jump in here now and tell me if I'm getting better at it, but it was definitely a tactic that I used a lot that just never panned out well.
Okay, so we're really gonna get into it now. All right, good to know. Give me a second to say bye to my friends. We'll come back to you lovers. All right, everybody watching, thank you so much for being part of this. As you know, our full classes are only inside of the Lovers community, as well as a library of classes that we've shot in the past, and a whole other host of materials and conversations designed to make you your best, most authentic, most alive lover. If you're interested in learning about it, go to loversbyshan.com/community. All right, I'll see you next week.
QTS is building more than a data center in Dane County. We're partnering with Alliant Energy to enable 750 megawatts of new renewable energy sources, supporting sustainable generation while lowering costs. We use a closed-loop, water-free cooling system that conserves billions of gallons of water each year. And we're investing millions locally, from scholarships and workforce development to nonprofits and first responders. QTS, powered by people, driven by purpose. Paid for by QTS.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.